we do the same. So of course we have to be collegial in this approach to the matter. Now, I realised that our tea goodies had not been put out because the remnants of their tea were still on the table. So I just, you know, it's been suggested to me that why don't we all run out and take a tea break? What you can do is have a mini rolling tea break. One or two at a time just pop out there. If you're desperate for a cup of tea, because the tea break will only be at 11. For anyone who'd like a cup of tea would be welcome just to go one at a time without a queue. So that's what I want to do. Thank you very much for being here this morning. And we did get some of the late apologies and so on. I'm sorry about the many accidents that have been occurring here. On your right then, Miss Luden, you are all right, you're recovered. I mean, you've got a lot of support there on that side. Yes, good. Thank you very much. Good morning, Minister. Good to see you. We are fortunate in DTI that if the minister's not attending, most of the time we get the deputy minister, and that's how it should be. And I can just indicate to the ministers that we are working with the NCOP to ensure that we create a more efficient process in the program whereby you're not running backwards and forwards and trying to use the airport as an office. So we're going to link up on the briefings, but this unfortunately can only occur in the next quarter. So apologies that you've been spending a lot more time down here. Everyone who's got a mic on other than me should turn it off. I think they're still left on from rules. And I'd like to welcome once again the Deputy Minister then, the Honourable Messina, as well as the EG on training. Consumer and corporate regulation. Of course, the minister always has the prerogative to make one or two comments if he wishes. And if not, we'll go straight to the DDG to run the team.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. Again, Chair, we must thank the committee for giving us an opportunity. On Tuesday, we were in this committee, Chair. We were focusing on consumer protection. And today, we will be focusing on companies, basically the corporate regulation side of our work. As I indicated before, there is a balance that we always seek to strike. So we look at consumers, but we look at companies, and we strike the balance so that all of the areas are regulated properly to give the best benefit for the market, but to ensure that we get consumer goods at fair prices, lower prices, and that there's competition in the market. Chair, I was hoping that because we have the Deputy Minister, that he will do some introduction for us. And but he's indicating that I can proceed, Chair. So, Chair, I just want to also introduce the other members that are here from our side. From the TRP, Chair, that take over regulation panel, we also have Ms. Margaret Motsohai, who's also the manager there in the TRP. Chair, I think you're correct to say that it's the first time that you hear about them, because we've really not brought them to Parliament, and they've not been called to come in and report on anything, really. It may be an indication of the good job that they're doing. But today, I think, Chair, you will then be in a position to get the relevance of what they're doing in this space. We also have Max Tibera, who has been here also on Tuesday with us. He's from our Public Entity Oversight Office within the DG's office. He's responsible for ensuring and assisting our entities with government matters, just so that we are always on track on this issue. There are two gentlemen, Chair, that are seated here. The first one here is Mr. Simpiwe Ngwana. Mr. Simpiwe Ngwana is our Director for Intellectual Property Law and Policy. And the one sitting next to him is Mr. Desmond Ramabulana. Desmond is the Director for Company Law and Policy. So these are the people that basically do the technical work around whatever we bring here in respect of companies, but as well as intellectual property. Chair, I'm hoping that I've introduced everybody. I forgot the other important gentleman behind me here. We've got Mr. Rory Voller. Rory is the Deputy Commissioner at CIPIC, that is the Companies and IP Commission, the former CIPRO. So Rory works with Ms. Astrid Ludin here. And I'm going to now proceed. If I've omitted anybody, Chair, we'll just continue to introduce people as they engage with the committee. Chair, as I've indicated, I'm not going to go through all of the slides. You'll see that the presentation has got a number of slides. Some is just for information, because this is really supposed to be a briefing, really, on the overview of our mandate. And we, obviously, due to time, will not be in a position to cover extensively each and every aspect, but we'll ensure that the committee has a sense of what we're doing in this space and what our mandate is and how we're implementing it. Chair, just by way of a context, I indicated that although we're focusing on company area, Companies Act area, we also are including the intellectual property aspect, because the Companies and IP Commission is responsible for those two aspects. So we will, obviously, as we interact with the committee, deal with these issues separately in more detail, but we'll obviously clarify where it's necessary. Chair, in regards to the intellectual property space, Intellectual property is very key to the economy. And unfortunately, in most countries like South Africa, not much attention is given to enhancing, support in that area. This relates largely to, ideas that people have, creative ideas, that should be turned into business ideas. What you find often in the space is that an entrepreneur will come up with some innovation, and because they do not have funding to actually develop it into something and they do not know where to go, they would go and knocking at various doors and putting proposals to various companies, and they get to be declined, but the next minute they see their concept being implemented by the company that they've gone to actually try and get funding. And when they try to now raise a dispute around that area, you find that they had not protected that intellectual property. And therefore it becomes very difficult to challenge something that you never protected. So it is important to really put a focus on this area because people are not aware and people get to be robbed on a daily basis. There are instances, we've seen some of the cases. Obviously we cannot comment about the outcomes or whether the cases are right or wrong, but the allegations around, especially if you look at radio stations, you look at TV stations, people put proposals of a particular script and they say, no, but this is not in accordance with our strategy, And then the next minute, they will see that program running on TV, and it's now owned by somebody else. And those challenges are coming at all times. And what we realize as well is that the framework that we have for dealing with disputes in this area is also very challenging because people are not able to get immediate redress around that area. But as we go along in the presentation, Chair, you'll see some of the issues that we are addressing now going forward to try and address those challenges. But I was just putting it in a very simple term to say intellectual property in terms of how we support it as a country, in terms of how we also incentivize it, it's not up to the level to enable us to actually reap the benefits of what intellectual property can do. You'll see the statistics in the slide later on, where the contribution, for instance, just on the copyright-based industries, your artistic work and so forth, in terms of contribution in the country, we've got like about 4.11% to the GDP and about 4% in respect of just jobs. But there is also a whole lot of data that is not accounted for because a bigger part of this is done in the informal sector. So that data as well is not properly collated to actually show the real potential of this sector. So this is an area that has got a potential in this country. We've seen what has happened in Nigeria, for instance, in terms of how they've actually just consolidated around supporting development of films and so forth, so that we can actually bring this part of the industry to the appropriate level of contribution. It has got potential and we need to ensure that we support it. Chair, we're also a member of WIPO, which is the World Intellectual Property Organization. Our eight entities do participate in all of the technical meetings as well, and ourselves in terms of the number of discussions that are happening worldwide on intellectual property, just to make sure that we are on board and we are on, abreast with all of the developments in that space. Chair, and in terms of just enforcement around intellectual property, South Africa is ranked around 17 in the world on IP enforcement. But there are issues around that as well. But we will cover them as we go along. In as much as we can be rated high in terms of how we enforce intellectual property, it's important to remember that intellectual property is largely a private right which an individual needs to be enforcing. But there's also elements of the developmental aspect of intellectual property which we need to focus on, that as much as we we enforce the laws, but we create the space for fair use, for access to intellectual property, so that, you know, intellectual property does not continue to deny access to medicine, to education, and all of that. So I'm saying that the rankings around how we enforce it should be matching against how we actually create a conducive environment for creative ideas to actually be commercialized and for people to realize income from their creative ideas. Chair, this is just a slide that indicates the ranking in terms of the, we commissioned the study, which was conducted on our behalf by WIPO, just to have a sense of, you know, how the creative industries are doing, in particular copyright. And this is just an indication of what I've just said around the contribution to employment as well as the contribution to GDP. If you look at, for instance, the US, you'll see that they actually are getting a benefit out of this. You'll see that the employment also is actually a bit high in terms of what they get from that industry. As well as if you look at the other countries that are a bit higher, you can see that they're around 11%. And I think that indicates to us that there's huge potential, depending on how we actually coin our legislative framework to allow for that to happen. Because if we don't do that, we can have the best legislation in the world, but then it doesn't talk to our people and our environment. So it is important that we look at that very carefully. Chair, I've covered this slide on Tuesday. This is just as I've indicated, as we do the regulations, as we remove regulation, as we enhance regulations, we always are trying to make it easy for companies to do business in South Africa. That speaks to our own local businesses, but as well as investors that want to put money into this country, that it should be easy for them to come into the country and actually operate. So we are driven by that. We always look at where the other countries are at, and as I indicated on Tuesday, Chair, we are glad that we are consistent around our rating, but there are still challenges, as I've indicated, around issues of electricity, around issues of registering property in the country, and I think all of us know those areas are a challenge. And as long as the improvements in that space are slower, then we'll continue to be challenged in terms of our ratings. But a whole lot of areas have improved significantly, and the World Bank has acknowledged that. Our reforms around the company law framework has been noted, but also, we also, from an audit point of view, our framework is highly rated. In fact, I think there we on the top five in terms of if you rank around the world. So our processes are very, very sound. Our financial reporting standards are very, very flexible. They are, you know, allowing our companies to be in a position to operate at costs that are reasonable. So that's what we're talking about, Chair. And I've said, Chair, that at times when we talk about cost of doing business and reducing regulatory burden, people think that we're talking about eradicating any regulation. That's not the case. We just want to ensure that there's proper regulation, that the regulation is necessary, is at minimum, and so that then we are able to ensure that there's governance in everything that happens in terms of business operations. But we don't want to leave the regulatory space to chance, that it should be just a free-for-all and everyone for himself, because that's how cartels develop, that's how monopolies develop, in a space that is not properly regulated. So we want to prevent that. But we'll ensure continuously that we reduce the cost of doing business and we remove all the unnecessary regulatory provisions that we may be having from time to time. Chair, this slide is just a process flow, really, in terms of how we look at our work, from policy formulation, which happens largely from the department, and then where we then propose policy stances to cabinet, and cabinet would adopt the policies after obviously we've consulted sufficiently. And then from those policy options, it might be that we come up with legislation that seeks to achieve certain policy objectives that we've identified. And that's where the legislature plays a role. That's when we come here, Chair. And after this parliament has then finalized the legislation, then we then will hand it over to the implementation part of the work. That is where the agencies come in. And the implementing arm is through the agencies. And the agencies are basically supposed to ensure that what the purpose and the objective of the legislation as adopted by Parliament is actually achieved through the implementation. So it is always important that as they implement their mandate, they go back to what was intended to be achieved and ensure that they work towards that at all times. And Chair, then from the implementation side of things, there would be obviously the regulators that are investigating, that monitor and all of that, but then there is another level which is the process of adjudication and redress mechanisms. That is where we create our tribunals, and then there's the courts there, the normal courts, where we referring other matters to the normal courts, so that is the space. But you'll recall that in terms of the approach we've taken is that on matters relating to business activities, we don't want businesses to wait for long in courts trying to resolve disputes. It's for that reason that we've got specialized courts. That is why we've got the Companies Tribunal that will hear matters that relate to the Companies Act so that they don't go and queue in the normal courts with all of the other cases of fraud and so forth. So this model has worked very well. I think the committee is aware of the successes that we've made through the Competition Tribunal. And so this is the model that we are using for all of the areas that are important to get a speedy resolution on matters. Then, Chair, then we move on to monitoring and evaluation, which is a continuous exercise that we do in respect of every regulatory solution we put on the ground. We do our monitoring and evaluation. And on various intervals, we do our impact assessment just to see if we are achieving what we sought to achieve. And then it goes back. If we find that there's certain things that are not working very well, then we go to the review of the policy, then we see if the policy is still sound and so forth. So it's just a cycle. Chair, these are the entities that we'll be talking to today. You will see that in terms of both the Companies Act as well as the intellectual property side of things, there are specialist committees. These are committees that consist of people that are largely experts in these areas that come together and meet regularly, monitor the environment and advise the minister if there's any need for any changes, if there's anything, issues that the minister needs to focus on and so forth. So this is really just helping us to also get some independent advice from people that are working in the space. We've got a number of them in companies, we've got a number of them as well in the intellectual property space. And Chair, then the Companies and IP Commission, you'll recall that this is what we used to have as CIPRO. At a time it was just merely a registry, but now the in terms of the Companies Act, their functions and mandate are more, I think, enhanced, and they are providing the solution that was lacking on the ground. Previously, we used to have a lot of complaints, especially from minority shareholders, who often are not even given notifications to meetings. Some of them get to be removed as shareholders without their knowledge. Some of them get to be removed as directors of companies without their knowledge. And these people would always complain, but the complaints process was taking just too long. And by the time you get a decision, which is a process that even at the time when you get a decision, you still have to now approach the courts to try and lay charges, and then you process it either through a civil a civil claim process to try and get something, but it will be probably after 2 or 3 years. So the Companies Act made that a bit much more easier through the Companies and IP Commission, which now receives the complaints and has resources to investigate them much more speedily so that then we can get some redress. You'll recall that we received a whole lot of complaints around hijackings of companies and so forth previously, where people just get to be, you know, removed from companies without their knowledge and so forth. And the process of just resolving that was just taking too long. So now the mechanism is much more better, but I'm sure that the commissioner as well will just elaborate on some of those in terms of how they're working now in practice. But to the extent possible, we'll cover that in the slide. Chair, the takeover regulation panel is also established in terms of the Companies Act. It looks specifically at mergers and acquisitions. You'll see that most of the hostile takeovers in the country go there, but also transactions, especially transactions that happen in respect of listed companies, you know, when they acquire control over another company and then they've got an obligation to offer, you know, their shares to the public and so forth. So they deal with those types of transactions. But I will allow also Ntate Phakeng to elaborate on that, Chair, when we're done with the presentation, just to crystallize exactly what work they do in that space. Chair, there is then the adjudication I've indicated. The Companies Tribunal is a specialized court dealing with those the matters around the Companies Act. And then we also have a Copyright Tribunal. When I speak about the Copyright Review Commission, I will also just allude to the challenges that we have with the Copyright Tribunal as it currently stands. And then we also have the Takeover Specialist Special Committee, which looks at some of the disputes or challenges that may be against the decision that has been made either by the executive in the TRP or the structure that makes decision in the TRP. So it's basically just a step before you can approach another court to address your issue. Chair, in 2008, we processed the Companies Act. This was a major reform of the corporate law framework in the country. And I must say that this process took so long, at some point we're not sure if it's ever going to happen. And up until 2008, basically, we were operating on the 1973 Act. And at some point the minister said, some of you were not even born. and so, I mean, it didn't make sense because as we were introducing new strategies, new programs, the legal framework was not supporting those programs. And we have indicated that before, that there was a need to radically change that and speedily so. I think, Astrid, you were still in the department when this process started. And there was a huge backlog, I think, in terms of just dealing with all of those legislation that were so outdated, that predate the democratic dispensation. Chair, the one thing also that was important is that the Companies Act of 1973 was also not taking into account the principles of our constitution. So you will recall that there were provisions that were debated extensively in this parliament which should not have been applicable in this country after 1994, and because they were basically just in violation of the constitution, and they continued to occur, and up until somebody takes it to court, it just continues like that. Chair, we did that. The Companies Act was passed by this parliament, and we actually came through before it was implemented to make a few corrections which were finalized by this parliament. We did the regulations and then we established all of these entities that were established by the Companies Act. That is the CPIC, Companies Tribunal, and the TRP, and those relevant specialist committees. Chair, the important aspect of this transition is also the reform of CPRO as a registry at the time to the Companies and IP Commission, which is a regulator that looks at all the aspects from education and awareness, registration, enforcement, and then also monitoring some of the provisions around standards and business rescue. Chair, I've indicated that we made, I think, significant reforms. The key features of the Companies Act, which I think, as we talk to the work of the agencies, hopefully it will show why we're saying that these are the important features of the company's legislation. We basically sought to simplify the processes around registration. We sought to make it flexible, that the law should be able to cater for a small company to a big company. So the size should not matter in terms of that. Where a company is bigger or the public interest score is higher, then there are other requirements for them to comply with. But the flexibility is what we sought to achieve so that all of that can happen within the same framework and that we don't have different laws dealing with the sizes of companies. And we have actually managed to achieve this. All over the world, they will tell you South Africa has managed to achieve what most jurisdictions are battling with right now. However, we want to ensure that as we implement it, we see those results. And we'll continuously do that, Chair. And it's an area of continuous improvement. And I think that also the market understands that we'll continue to improve around this space. Chair, the other feature that is the business rescue provisions. This feature basically came into being to try and ensure that companies are saved before they get into a liquidation stage. It is not efficient, it is not desirable for any company to actually go through liquidation because there are job losses there. But more, you find that a company that had a plant, once it closes down and sells all of those assets, it's very difficult to try and regroup those assets to make them more productive in the market again. So we don't want to see liquidations. Yes, there are instances where it's unavoidable, but we don't want to see liquidations. So this provision was brought in place to try and, you know, put interventions prior to a company getting into a stage where they actually have to go to be liquidated. You will see in the statistics that the CIPC has provided that there's still some companies that have gone into business rescue but have ultimately been liquidated because the rescue probably didn't manage to save the company. But the intention is that when a company is in financial distress, that it introduces a rescue mechanism before the situation is severe. But it happens that some companies would only come in at a later stage to try and save the company when the company is already in a disastrous situation. Chair, the Social and Ethics Committee is one of the important introductions. And this is intended really to promote corporate governance, human rights, and social responsibility around companies, especially companies that operate in spaces like the mining and so forth, so that they actually are sensitive to the environment, are sensitive to the people, are sensitive to the rights of the workers and all of that. So, Chair, if you recall, in fact, the submission that was being made in regard to this provision was a submission that was made by COSATU at the time in this parliament to require that, in fact, there should be representation of employees on the board of companies as a matter of law. And through discussions in parliament, it was ultimately agreed that, you know, let's introduce the Social and Ethics Committee to try and achieve some of the concerns that were being raised in that space. And I remember, Chair, that Honourable Ben Turok at the time was very instrumental around some of the proposals in this space. And we are happy that we are seeing a number of companies introducing this, but we'll also see in the report that we received from the Companies Tribunal that we are equally receiving a lot of applications to be exempted from establishing a Social and Ethics Committee. Yes, there would be reasons, the Act allows for it, but I think when you sit back and you just look at it just from a lay person's point of view, why would somebody not want to have a Social and Ethics Committee? I mean, what is difficult about that? It's a committee that helps the company to just remain socially responsible and respect the rights of workers and the rights of the environment that they operate in. So you'll see that there are some, you know, figures that are showing that the increasing numbers around that space, perhaps we should be looking into it. Chair, the independent reviews were introduced because you recall that as part of reducing the cost of doing business, auditing costs are also a significant cost to a business, especially small businesses. So in the Companies Act, we introduced another mechanism to not subject all companies, even if they're small, to an audit, a full audit. So companies can actually also do an independent review, which has the same status, although obviously it doesn't cover, but for purpose of assurance, it does have at least the same assurance principles, and it does give comfort in terms of the governance in that particular company. So the reports that we've seen, though, in the papers is that in the implementation, this is actually still a challenge in a sense that some lenders, especially banks, still insist on requiring audited financial statements, and which then, in a way, would undermine the whole purpose of, you know, allowing smaller entities to do either compilations or independent reviews. So this is an area that we also continue to monitor to just ensure that we also achieve that benefit, because it's intended to benefit small companies so that we do not increase their cost of doing business. Chair, I think the last part that I should just talk to is really the simplification of the registration process. You will recall that one of the interventions here was also to make it quicker to register a company, in a sense that if you don't have a name of the company yet, you can actually register a number of that company. So a number can be used as a name up until you've resolved the issue of name. But the fact that you do not have a name that is acceptable should not prevent you from actually registering a company. You'll recall, Chair, that we used to have a significant backlog around name reservations, and then as a result, people were not able to move into the registration process as they await the name reservation process to be completed to clear the name for them to use. So I think in that space, we are seeing that there is an impact, and the companies do not have to wait that long. Chair, I've covered the issues around the advisory committees, the specialist committees that are advising the minister. I'm not going to dwell on that, but the Financial Reporting Standards Council is one of those committees that are advising the minister in terms of the international reporting standards. We always are required to be abreast with those international standards, because our companies should be matching all of the standards that are accepted internationally. So we are seeing that this work is coming okay for now, and they have made significant input into the processes around the standards, and currently they are looking at the standards for SMMEs, and we're hoping that at least as we apply those standards, there will be standards that are suitable for South Africa as well. And the Specialist Committee on Company Law, this is a committee that advises the Minister on the Companies Act and the policy, but also advises CIPIC as well on the management of their work. This chair is led by Professor Michael Katz, and it has been doing a very good job since it was established, and we are seeing value for what we've established here, Chair. Chair, just as one of the areas that we have also zoomed into is the training on corporate governance, and we are continuing to work with the Institute of Directors to develop skills around corporate governance to ensure that we further the objectives of the Companies Act. And so far, Chair, I'm happy to indicate that just in the last financial year, we trained 170 women, and we are now in the process of placing them in various entities to participate in the board structures and decision-making structures. Chair, I'm just now moving quickly to the area around intellectual property, and this is the area that Chair, we came to this Parliament with, and it was a very, very complex area. It's always a complex area. I think I will ask Simpiwe just later on to just explain how this interface really, in a very simple way. Intellectual property, under that we are administering the Patents Act, which basically looks at the inventions, and we have the Copyright Act, that's the one that relates to the books, the songs, and all of that, the rights that are attached to that. And the Designs Act, we spoke extensively about it when we came to this committee as well, when we're doing the amendments to protect indigenous knowledge. The issues of design was discussed extensively because it's really important in this area. Your traditional designs, they do need to be protected. In other countries, you can use them if you do not contribute to benefit the owners of those. So communities do actually benefit from this kind of protection. And the Trademarks Act, and as indicated, Chair, we did come through to Parliament and process the amendment to all of those laws that I just covered to actually protect the indigenous knowledge through the IP system. The Patents Act was amended already in 2005. So the process that we ran here on indigenous knowledge was just a follow-up to ensure that all of the IP legislation actually integrate that protection. Chair, we also administer the Counterfeit Goods Act. You know that it is our concern as the Department of Trade and Industry as well. If we have a whole lot of counterfeit goods in the country, often very substandard goods that are passed on to consumers, and they do kill our industries. You've seen what has been happening in the textile industry. We've seen a lot of counterfeit goods coming through and being sold in the country, and those are killing the industries. So it is our concern in this space. The Merchandise Marks Act also is one of the important areas that we're dealing with. This, for instance, talks to issues around marks. Like, for instance, for the World Cup, we had to declare protected status for that event. So those processes are the processes that happen under this this Act. Chair, we have published for public comments the IP policy. It is now at the stage of finalization. We are finalizing the consultation processes with various stakeholders, and this policy will go back to Cabinet for final approval. And we are happy that this has been well received. Yes, there are areas that certainly, because they're introducing new things, would be controversial. But we have listened to all the stakeholders, and we are making sure that we will balance that. The concerns that have been raised, we'll try to mitigate some of those concerns. And the Minister also created an interministerial committee to ensure that the relevant departments, like the Department of Health, the Department of Communications, Science and Technology, also contribute to this policy, so that whatever we put out is, you know, is a reflection of what government would like to see from a policy perspective. So those processes are taking place, and Simpiwe is involved directly in those processes. Chair, we are now finalizing the regulations to implement the amendments to protect indigenous knowledge. So we expect that Act will come into effect this year, in this financial year, as soon as we've established all of the structures, the council, as well as the trust fund that is going to deal with the issue of royalties that come from indigenous knowledge. And then CIPIC obviously will also be instrumental in looking at the database issues around how we protect indigenous knowledge and how we record it. Chair, I'm not going to go on to this slide. It's just some of the activities that we've been involved in. This is really basically to just continue to keep ourselves abreast and keep the public aware of what is happening in that space. Chair, this I will just touch on because, Chair, this committee did actually ask specifically for an update on this, on the anti-piracy project. This is an important project because, Chair, we do have a challenge in this country where owners of creative work do not benefit from the work that they've created. And purely because there's too much piracy, CDs are being pirated and sold to the public directly. They're sold on the streets as if it's oranges when it's actually illegal products. There is a huge gap around enforcement, but also there are issues that we are looking at in terms of awareness raising so that we can discourage the demand for this product. Because if the products are still having a demand and there are people buying them, they continue to be produced. So we're also looking at that. So it's a multifaceted approach that we're looking at. So this followed the engagement by the president with the industry, and the industry raised certain concerns, and we then followed up with a consultative conference with the industry, and the industry indicated that they would like to see campaigns across the country, and then they also would like to be assisted to formalize the sector so that they can start operating businesses, formal businesses, as well as the concern they raised around their royalties not being paid by collecting societies. And so they then requested that there be a commission to look into that. That commission was established and it was led by Judge Fulham. I must say, Chair, that we did go and get him back from Swaziland. So that is why he's in the country now doing Marikan. But we did go get him back from Swaziland for this project because we thought that we needed a chairperson that is knowledgeable on this subject, and he did a very brilliant job. Those are the issues that they raised, and then we did embark on that, on the anti-piracy campaign, and there were roadshows, campaigns through the media and direct activations in various communities, and we do not show the statistics in this presentation, but I think this is an important area of the work, I think, for this industry, which I think in due course as we engage with the committee, we can elaborate on. Chair, the important aspect around the Copyright Review Commission, and Chair, I must say that we took an approach in the department that this thing of establishing commissions that take too long and people even end up forgetting that they raised an issue. So we're limiting our commissions now to just 1 year. If you don't do the job within 1 year, then it means you don't know what you need to be doing. So that's what we've done. The Copyright Review Commission was done within a year. The Gambling Review Commission was done within a year because we just tried to make sure that we give immediate redress to people that have raised concerns. So the report was produced. It was debated here in Parliament. And there are issues that were raised as key areas. And I've just summarized them in this slide. But key to that, Chair, is that one of the findings in that report is that in terms of just the collection and distribution of royalties, we distribute over 70% of royalties to international companies. So the money from South Africa actually goes outside. Only less than 30% stays in this country. So which means that the point that I was making around, you know, providing the necessary support, the incentives to develop the creative industry in this country so that you can facilitate the issues of ownership of intellectual property in South Africa needs a specific focus. So what we have is that, yes, the royalties are collected, but over 70% goes outside because our intellectual property in this country, which we register, is actually owned outside, is not South African. So I think the commissioner will also just, maybe in terms of their statistics, in terms of what they register, around patents, around trademarks, they can give us an indication of whether they are seeing any change in that and what we will be required really to enhance that. Chair, the other thing is around the issue around local content. We continue to have challenges around local content, but the assessment that has been done so far is indicating that a whole lot of radio stations and broadcasters are actually achieving above the required local content, but we do need to increase the local content. So this is the process that is happening under the implementation of these recommendations. Chair, I'm going to now stop on that one, but before I move to the next slide, I just need to also indicate that one of the concerns that was raised around the collecting societies was, for instance, collecting societies collect the royalties on behalf of the artists, for instance, and then they will then distribute it to those artists once they've collected that. They do have admin fees, you know, to run their costs. And one of the findings of the CRC was that it does look like the admin costs are too high. They are above the norm, and the norm is really around 2080, but they continue to be above the norm. So they were recommending that there should be regulation to make sure that they do not use too much of the artist's money to run the operations cost that goes to salaries and all of those areas. So that's an area. But also over and above, they collect generally for almost everyone. But when they distribute, they will distribute to the members. So there would be some money that is unallocated that remains with them. So how they use that money was questioned by the CRC to say, if you've collected for people that are not your members, how do you then make sure that you get that money to those people? If you don't locate those people, how do you then utilize that money going forward? Does it come back to you? You know, do you just use it as you please, even if it's not your money? So those are the questions that came through. Chair, we think that the CRC report is going to be implemented fully. We have put on a parliamentary program the amendments to the Copyright Act, which is going to, the Copyright Act, which is going to actually integrate some of the things that the CRC report has raised. So that is in this financial year. And we're hoping that this will then bring about the closure to most of the concerns that the artists have raised. And the committee was established to monitor the implementation. And we are happy to report that actually the royalties are being paid. In fact, SABC has been very progressive in making those payments because it's one of the biggest, obviously, corporate broadcasters, and they are the ones that actually account for a whole lot of part of that work. And SAMRO, as well as a collecting society, has also given us their status and statistics around how they are paying, but the concern around unallocated revenue still continues. Chair, I'm going to not touch on these slides. It's just information purposes in terms of the organizations in the space. And I will just browse through some of the achievements and the activities of the agencies. And as I indicated, Chair, the heads of the institutions will also just elaborate on that after this presentation. Chair, you will see that the statistics around company registration are really showing an improvement. If you look at the first row there, you'll see that in 2011, the CPIC was really 100% manual in terms of applications. This has moved significantly now, where we find that we are finding more and more people filing online, which is actually also improving in terms of increasing the improvement around the turnaround times, and also has an impact on the queues that we used to see at CPIC. And I think the Commissioner will also speak about some of the centres that have been established that are now allowing self-service in various points around Gauteng specifically. And the turnaround times as well, if you check, I mean, previously it used to take long to just wait to register a company, but now you'll see, in 2014, we are recording on average 11 days. And those are the things that we were talking about around simplification so that the processes are much more quicker. Chair, I think in terms of just the uptake around e-filing, I've indicated the improvements, and I'm not going to talk more on this slide. I will allow the Commissioner to actually talk to that in more detail. Chair, you'll see in terms of this light, in 2011, when we implemented the Companies Act, the Companies Act discontinued the registration for closed corporations. The reason why closed corporations were discontinued is because the company law framework was changed in such a way that you don't need a separate legislation to provide that kind of flexibility. The flexibility is already embedded there. So now what we are doing is we have a process of conversion where closed corporations have been given an opportunity. If they want to convert, they can convert a CC into a company. Those that are not yet ready to convert, they are still allowed to operate a closed corporation, so there's no pressure on them to do that. But we do hope that they will actually convert so that we can then work under one system. So you'll see that we're also seeing some improvements around the registration of cooperatives, and I think we're going to see more and more of this now with the amendments to the Cooperatives Act, because there is a huge drive from the department as well to promote the creation of co-ops. These are just the figures around the conversions from CC to companies, and you'll see that we are seeing some improvement, but you know, we're hoping that this will increase as we go along. Chair, I'll leave this to, again, the summary and just the emphasis that the commissioner will give is really around operational improvement. So I don't want to dwell on that. I think she can really cover that area very well. The main area I think that we are focusing on, as well as the department, again, is the business rescues. I've indicated that this is an important feature for us, and it's like the debt cancelling, but of businesses. So if you think debt cancelling around the credit space, this is the debt cancelling on the side of companies. We are seeing the numbers there. As I indicated, we're seeing a lot of applications, but a few that have been successfully concluded. And we are continuing to also see that some do still lead to liquidations. As you can see, around 73, you know, in total have still, you know, led to liquidations, even though the company was under rescue. So the specialist committee on company law is also looking into this to look at what actually are the reasons for some of the rescue processes failing. Is it because of the quality of the business rescue practitioners? Is it because companies come too late? Or what is it? So they are doing analysis of that, and we're hoping that we'll get some results as well on that. Chair, around intellectual property, these are some of the registration statistics. And I must indicate again, like I said, Chair, we continue to see that we are basically just registering international intellectual property. So the Minister has raised this also as a concern to say there must be something that we can do to ensure that we also promote the registration of our own intellectual property. Chair, the Companies Tribunal has been receiving cases, and obviously it has been slow, but we are seeing now a number of cases being referred to them. And I must say, Chair, that we are receiving the benefit of the introduction of the Companies Tribunal. Remember, the main issue was the turnaround time, that we need cases to be resolved. They are resolving their cases within 30 days of allocation, which is good. You don't get that in the normal court. You will wait on the roll forever. So, and not because it's by design, it's because there is a number of cases that go to the ordinary court system. So now for companies, this is a special dispensation. And we also are issuing the judgments within the right turnaround time as well. And all the judgments of the tribunal are available on their website, and the members can also just update themselves from time to time just to monitor the progress on that in that space. In terms of just the public outreach, the tribunal's practice guidelines are available on their website as well, where they basically provide some guidance in terms of how they would look into the issues and what their approaches are to adjudication processes. There are some of the cases that have been considered by the tribunal. Like I said, the specialist committee is also very concerned about the application for exemptions. It doesn't look good. I mean, it's like you wanting to exempt yourself from a very fundamental principle, and the question is, why do you want to do that? But the exemption process was to allow for situations, for instance, for a company that might be a multinational that already has got those systems, so that you don't duplicate some of the systems. But we should look at this and see if we are still on the right track. Chair, I'll go just quickly to the takeover regulatory panel. But on this one, I really, like I said, I would like the CEO to actually just explain their work, so that also, because it's the first time we're bringing him here as well. So just so that they can explain what is it that they're doing in that space. They're dealing with a number of transactions. I said March 2014, they dealt with 51. They've made 164 rulings on affected transactions. And they have been providing advisory opinions as well. And Chair, what is important about the TRP and the and CIPIC is that these are self-funding institutions. So they are not dependent on the allocation that we get from the Treasury. So continuously, the issue around the funding model is a focus for them to always make sure that they are sustainable and that they do not find themselves without finances for dealing with the issues. Chair, the other thing that is important is that in terms of the decisions of these institutions, the TRP, the Companies Tribunal, they have not been taken on review. So meaning that they are doing a very good job. You recall that when the Consumer Tribunal presented as well on Tuesday, they also, that is one of the successes, they have not been taken on review. So which means that they do apply their minds to their work, and they also follow the processes that are outlined in the Act accurately. There are some of the cases that have been dealt with, just so that members can identify the work of the TRP with what is happening in the market. Hostile takeovers, something that is not nice, but they do happen. And when they do happen, a decision must be very quick, because it's a matter of days, you know. So that's the role that they play. And they can then just share with you, Chair, what is it that they do in that space in that 5 minutes that they will have. Chair, these are the challenges that they're facing. And you'll see here, we're not pleading any poverty. Like I said, they're self-sustainable, so we're not looking for money. We are fine. And the only area that we'll just need to beef up and pay attention to is the Companies Tribunal in terms of its funding model, and that's what we are working on. And we think that soon we'll come up with a model that will ensure their sustainability. Chair, one of the challenges is around visibility of our agencies, but also, you know, people should know where they are and how to access them. That communication we have raised with all of them, and the Minister has emphasized that they should make sure that accessibility is key to what they're doing. Chair, this is the work that we'll be doing going forward. In fact, I've covered all of that, but I think the one that I want to emphasize is the finalization of the implementation of the CRC report. Chair, this is particularly important because the plight of artists has been a problem. Every time we say people die poor, it's not because people do not work hard. It's because people are being ripped off every day. Because the law does not protect them in a way, because, like I said, intellectual property is a private right, so you must enforce it yourself. If somebody is using your work, it's you that is supposed to run after them, taking them to court. Often people don't have that kind of money. So hence we are saying that, yes, we must have a right intellectual property system, but it must also talk to our own situation, where we need to protect the vulnerable. The artists are vulnerable. The contracts that they sign on a daily basis are not favorable to them, and the power balances are not the same in the negotiation, so they don't have the power to negotiate. So we are looking into that now as we do the amendments to the Copyright Act, and we will deal with some of those issues. Chair, I've come to the end of the presentation, and again, thank you very much for the opportunity, and I hope I've covered everything, and I will, with your permission, Chair, hand over to the heads, the TRP, the Companies and IP Commission, as well as the Companies Tribunal, just their 5 minutes to elaborate on some of the issues. Thanks, Chair.
Just Everyone who starts to speak now, they know the DDG's voice very well, Lee Hanson. But if you would mention your name before you start speaking, thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, DDG, Minister, and honourable committee members. My name is Astrid Luden. I'm the Commissioner for the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission. The DDG has already touched, I think, on most of the issues that we would like to present to the committee. I'd like to just emphasise a few issues. The process of transforming the CIPC, not just about establishing a new regulator, but was also about transforming an existing institution. And when the organisation was established in 2011, we made it quite clear to the committee at that time that we thought it was quite a big task that needed to be undertaken. It's about a little bit more than 3 years down the line now, and I think we can safely say that the organisation has undergone a major transformation. At present, we're concluding probably the biggest change that we've introduced in the organisation, which is about changing the way it works, changing its systems, and introducing new channels for members of the public. So the building blocks for the organisation and for the new organisation are now in place. We now need to ensure that we can get the consistency right, that we can get all the stragglers, the query resolution and those sorts of issues right. I'm sure this is going to be highlighted by some of the committee members, so I'm going to preempt the question. If we look at some of the tables, the information that's in here, the information is derived from our annual report, so it is as at the end of March this year. In particular, I'd like to just draw your attention to those turnaround times that you displayed right in the beginning. That figure, if we look at the 2014 figure, the turnaround time for manual applications, the 11 days that's mentioned in there is the figure for March itself. So it's not an average for the year. Because after March is when we initiated a major change in the organization. I think it's been in the public domain as a renovation of a building, but it is not about a renovation of a building. It is about fundamentally transforming the way the organization does its work. So we have rolled out new computers, new cables, new ICT infrastructure throughout our building. We have put everybody in an open plan environment, and we've tried to remove paper as much as possible. So we've introduced a new electronic indexing system, and which allows us to save the documents electronically. And we've also introduced a scanning center, which I will ask the Deputy Minister to talk about a little bit more. So if in order to reach the CIPC or to transact with us at the moment, you can transact with us through our website. You can email transactions, scanned copies of documents to us. People also post documents to us, and they also drop them off at our current service centre in Sunny Park. And then we've also introduced a new channel called self-service terminals. And these are really intended for small businesses, people who don't feel comfortable transacting on the website, and we provide assistance for them to transact with us electronically. We also pushing people, or encouraging people, let me use that term, to email documents to us. Because the system that we've developed allows us to track those documents and store them electronically quite simply. When we receive paper-based documents right now, they are being scanned, and scanning is new in the organization. In the lead-up to the move, when the company's division was moving from one floor to another, they also held back. They tried to clear all the paper they had on their floor. So I'm sure you will have received some complaints, and I know we've had some correspondence with parliamentarians about documents that are still at the service centre and awaiting being scanned. Maybe the other thing to emphasise is the self-service terminals are currently available in our Sunny Park service centre. We are also opening one very shortly in Johannesburg City Centre, and we will be upgrading the Cape Town office to provide self-service terminals there. We are also providing we will also be opening an office at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange for listed entities and their subsidiaries. And then everybody else we would like to encourage to transact with us either through the website or through email to transactions. It's actually very interesting that the documents that we see that are dropped off at our office, they are not necessarily documents that have come from rural areas that people have posted, or even the mail. These are documents that we receive from the shelf company warehouse, from intermediaries that come with piles of paper, that actually have the capacity, they type out the information on the paper. So they are perfectly capable of transacting with us electronically. So I think those are the areas that I would like to highlight. Rory, would you like to talk a little bit more about the changes and perhaps about some of the intellectual property areas?
Thank you very much, Commissioner. The one thing that was quite stressed in terms of the Minister and his meeting, as well as in the IP policy, is the issue of substantive patents examination. The Commissioner did state that we, as an organization, has gone through a major transformation, not only in processes, but also in terms of people and structure. And what we've done is, in terms of our new organizational structure, we have now placed on the structure the positions for 20 patent examiners, which we are currently evaluating in terms of the modalities of how we're actually going to search and how we're going to examine patents, because it's an area which we believe is of national importance, and we're working very closely with the DTI as far as this is concerned in inputting in areas of the policy, as well as looking at how it's going to work practically. Regarding the issues of collecting societies, yes, we continue to engage also with the collecting societies of SAMPA and SAMRO and some of the disputes that they have and the distributions of the royalties. And we see ourselves playing a very active role in the administration in that area, and therefore to see that it works better, as the DG have stated, it is one where we are like very passionate about, and we take it quite seriously, and we want to see a transformation in that area. So in terms of collecting societies, we see ourselves playing a very important role in how they are administered and how the distributions flows and how the royalties are done. Just to touch on the issue around IKS, Indigenous Knowledge Systems, we also, in terms of our organigram and looking at the implementation of the legislation, we have also placed positions there in order for us to fulfill the role as per the amendments to the Intellectual Property Amendment Act. We're very focused in dealing with the issue about how we're going to process and register and set up the databases. We are very much in discussion with, for example, the Department of Science and Technology, Departments of Arts and Culture, and how we can collaborate in these efforts in order to ensure that we have a fully-fledged database there. We're also contributing to the regulations in this area to make sure that it's workable, to make sure that the aspects of the policy are taken into regard as far as the implementation, and therefore we are quite instrumental in dealing with this together with the DTI. As far as some of the areas in companies, the Commissioner, I think she's covered it. Just to say that when it comes to the issue of self-service terminals, we are quite proud of that achievement, because it was quite a good collaboration, good interdepartmental collaboration between ourselves and the Department of Home Affairs, because the self-service terminals, which we want to implement and have a rollout plan very soon, we will deal with that, involves a biometric application, and therefore there is no payment that flows from the applicants and the company registration applicants. So which means that the applications take far quicker and people don't have to have a back and to and fro, and we also deal with the whole issue of verification of the identity of the application. So we take out the fraud aspects. Signatures are not so strong in terms of identity, but if you look at biometrics, we certainly find a good strength as far as that is concerned. I hope I've covered some of the aspects. Good morning. Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. You have already pointed out this. My name is Lucky Parking, and as the DDG has already explained, this is the first time the TRP actually appeared in one of the committees. However, there's just one issue which I really wanted to clarify, that even though it's the first time we appear before any of the committees, the TRP has always been in existence for quite some time. In fact, Madam Chair, you asked, what are we taking over? It's not that what we are taking over, it's really a new name which reflects what this body is doing. It used to exist in terms of the 1973 Act. It was the Securities Regulation Panel. So we felt that it is really a mouthful, so we should rather change it and reflect exactly what we do. So I just wanted also to touch on the being a new body. I just want to touch on some of the transactions which we have regulated over the years. It may seem that the number 51 of affected transactions for some people might be high, it might be low, depending on which side of the fence you're sitting. So in general, a typical affected transaction, in essence, is a merger or a takeover, except that the lawyers chose a more complex term to say it's an affected transaction. But it's rather really a merger of companies or a buyout of a company. This is when two companies decide through their directors to buy the shareholders out, or they may buy the assets of the companies. Now, what is the mandate of this committee, of this body? The mandate really is the protection of investors, the protection of shareholders. I think, Madam Chair, you may have noted that South Africa is highly regarded in terms of protection of shareholders. So we are consistently rated very high, and one of the reasons for that is protection of investors, particularly when it comes to disclosures. And how do we do that? Our mandate is in Chapter 5 of the Companies Act, and also in Chapter 5 of the Companies Regulations. How do we do the protection? So one of the difficulties investors may find themselves in is the fact that there is lack of disclosures, often in a number of companies. So for instance, we require companies investors to actually disclose when you do an IPO. When you raise funding, you are required to make a certain disclosure and issue a prospectus. That requirement is enforced by SIPIC. Now, similarly, on our side, we say if after operating for a number of years, the company could have grown to such an extent that it's a bigger company, it's a more productive entity. What we say is that following that, when you do buy out shareholders, we require a similar protection. The intention is to allow shareholders to be treated fairly and equitably. The requirements, Madam Chair, are similarly applied across most developed countries, and our model is originated from the UK, and it's comparable to the best in the world, and it's also comparable to most of the Asian countries. That's how we benchmark ourselves as to how we compare with the rest of the world. And I can say with confidence, having attended a very recent conference, that we compare favorable, if not better, to some of our fellow regulators. Now, one of the issues which I want to point out as to, in terms of a specific.
I didn't get that. Obviously, you didn't say favorite regulators. What did you say?
Comparable regulators. Comparable regulators, yes. So, just to give an example as to how we would go about in a typical environment of protecting shareholders, which we during one of the conferences, we found out that in most jurisdictions, it's very difficult to enforce this particular requirement. And South Africa was highly commended for being to actually being able to enforce this requirement. It's the requirement to request a valuation of the share price of a company during a takeover. So in general terms, most jurisdictions simply rely on the independent expert's opinion without actually disclosing what we refer to as the actual price. As if I'm buying your house, it would be for 5 rand, whatever. We would like to see that disclosed to shareholders. This is just one of the examples, Madam Chair, which is very difficult to enforce, and South Africa have been very successful by means of statute to actually require such a disclosure. So our role affect a lot of investors, particularly, Madam, you may have realized that the Government Employee Fund is one of the largest investors on the stock exchange. And from that perspective, we affect a lot of asset managers in terms of our requirements. So the other point which I wanted to highlight is the typical rulings which we provide. I think in line with the Companies Act, where we try to reduce the cost of doing business for small companies. What we noticed during our tenure is that the new provisions of the Companies Act may have unintended consequences, such that private companies, small private companies, may be required to go to an expense of complying with our provisions. What we have, as an initiative from ourselves, we've used one of the sections of the Companies Act to actually try to give exemptions, provided, of course, that protections will still continue. What we do is to encourage private companies to apply to our institution, and based on certain disclosures, we will give them an exemption. The reference in the slide to 164 rulings, you will know that it refers to those as mostly being from private companies. This is in line with us trying to reduce the cost of compliance for small companies. And in addition to that, what we also do is to render, of course, a free consultations, such that parties cannot be required to comply with certain statute if they do not necessarily know how they should go about doing the compliance. However, I must point out that often we are not approached by the companies themselves. We are approached by corporate financiers, by lawyers, who in turn will take our advice and charge for the services to their clients. However, we are certainly willing, and we have publicized it on our website, that we do readily offer advice in terms of for private companies how to go about complying. So some of the important transactions you may have read about are the recent Adcock and CFR, which is a Chilean pharmaceutical company. It may appear that this transaction, in the normal course, is not a hostile offer, but behind the scenes, as a regulator, one was inclined to feel that although it's a friendly attempted measure behind the scenes, because some of the major shareholders do not support the transaction, it's in essence a hostile offer. If I may, Madam Chair, a hostile offer will occur where the directors of a company do not support a transaction, do not support the current or the particular shareholder from buying out that company.
That then results in a tension between, or a conflict between the different parties, and often the parties who are caught in between are the shareholders. Now, this is where our role becomes very, very crucial, to intervene and ensure that the conflict of interest between the two feuding parties are reduced, and we are able to intervene timeously, as the DDG has already pointed out, that in this type of transaction, time is of the essence. Often that we are required to be involved after hours, and often on confidential basis. Sometimes we are called to discuss a transaction on what they say is a no-name basis, without indicating who the parties are, and then you are required to give an independent opinion as a regulator to say this transaction will not be allowed or should not be allowed, and you will then be able to give your opinion or reasons there and there on the spot and based on your experience as a regulator as to why you believe this transaction should not be allowed. Now, coming to the recent hostile offer, I must say that this clearly indicated one of the difficulties of hostile takeovers. The types of conflicts which were involved in the last recent hostile of Project Kutele, where in essence management were unwilling to sell, such that the transaction was dragged out for almost entirely for a year. And I regret to say that as we are talking now, the company which is in question, it's currently under liquidation, simply because the managers, through conflict of interest, could not see that they should allow for the transaction to proceed. Madam Chair, finally, I just wanted also to point out that in our regulatory environment, from time to time, we do notice certain provisions of the Act which we believe may have unintended consequences for the stock market and for the investors. And one of those we have already pointed out, it relates to a company's buying back their shares, and it also relates to small private companies. And those we have already forwarded for a possible amendment, and we believe that during the course of our regulatory procedures, whenever we do see certain sections which we believe are not achieving the mandates which we have been set out in the Act, we certainly do make relevant proposal. Thank you, Madam Chair.
As well for that explanation, and it was quite constructive having you here, Mr. Pucking, today. Thank you. Of course, I know there'll be a number of questions still. Yes, but can we move on to the next one?
Good morning, Chair, Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members. Agnes Lema Saloyani from the Companies Tribunal. As the DDG has indicated, Companies Tribunal, currently our key focus is on building the capacity of the institution to deliver effectively and efficiently. We've just started operations in September 2012, so we're about 2 years old, and the turnaround time are improving even for this quarter, if I may report. This first quarter, instead of 69%, we have achieved about 80% in terms of our turnaround in relation to the issuing of decisions after the date of allocation. So that is a figure that we are tracking seriously because we want to provide speedy and cost-effective service. In terms of exemptions, If one consider the potential pool of people who must comply with exemptions from Social and Ethics Committee, which are your public listed companies and companies with a certain public interest score and your public entities, if you consider the pool of the potential people that must comply with the establishment of Social and Ethics Committee and what we are receiving, we're saying the pool is not too huge of what we are receiving, but it is something that we need to track and consider carefully. Of the cases, in terms of the exemptions from Social and Ethics Committee, of the cases that have been decided upon, 71% of those cases were refused in the previous financial year, 13-14 financial year. So 71% were refused and 29% were granted exemptions. We also, in terms of our outreach strategy, continue to strive to make sure that members of the public are aware of the existence of the companies tribunal. And we've just recently also done, apart from collaborating with the City of Tshwane and the DTI, we've also done some outreach with the Department of Communication in CDB municipality. One of the things that we will continue to, as we raise the profile of the Companies Tribunal, to focus on is one of the functions of the Companies Tribunal, which is to provide an alternative dispute resolution mechanism. And by that we mean the Act mandate the Companies Tribunal to provide not only adjudication services, but to provide mediation, conciliation, and arbitration services. And in terms of those, we have not received a lot of cases that relates to requests for mediation, arbitration, and conciliation. And it is a process that we would like to encourage because it is not only cost-effective, but also builds relations within companies in order that the parties within a company avoid acrimonious litigation processes. That, Chair, in a nutshell, is where we are as the Companies Tribunal. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for that. Is there anyone else, DDG, you would like to come in on at this point?
Chair, I think for now we are closed on our side, and then we will, I think, as we take questions and comments, then maybe elaborate on some of the things that may be necessary. But Chair, just to emphasize again the issue about takeovers and their importance. Takeovers are also a very nice tool for people to take out competition. And when people take out competition, then they immediately raise prices and the consumers suffer. So it's for that reason that the Takeover Regulation Panel is also there to just ensure that they regulate that, but also we have our competition authorities that are looking very closely at that to ensure that the competition is also occurring fair to the benefit of the country. Chair, I must just conclude by saying that all of our regulators are performing very well in terms of the accounting reports, unqualified audit reports and so forth. So we are continuing to really build on that, and there's continuous improvement. You can see in our turnaround times, it cannot happen in one day, but we are really getting there. And thanks, Chair, for the opportunity again.
Thank you very much, DDG. And like you are overlooked welcoming the Deputy Commissioner, Advocate Foller. You're very welcome, but also Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Ms. Naidu, as well. My apologies. Members, we will have the opportunity of asking questions, and we will do that. Right now, we are considering the minutes while we have a quorum. So, there, we're right on target by the looks of things, 10:45. So, if we can take the first set of minutes, the 24th of June, Tuesday, page 1, page 2, Remember, only those present can adopt. I hope that's quite clear. We have someone to propose adoption. Yes, Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by Honourable MacPherson. Honourable Ntali, you were actually there, but perhaps never noticed that. It's always useful to have different parties seconding the minutes or proposing. Thank you very much. Second set of minutes, and that is Tuesday the 1st of July. That was in this venue here, and you will remember we had Small Business Development join us, and I understand these minutes have also gone to them, for their, which they utilized in the debate. So if you look at page 1 there, yeah, please can you check to see your names are now spelled correctly and the correct initials are also there. Yep. Right. It is only one page because, as you know, it should have stated this, so perhaps there is a problem with that because you've got the presentation. Just a minute. Yes, Honourable Liyenge.
Yes, my initials are not correctly written here.
No, this is why I wasn't too sure, but thank you very much. They must comply with how you were sworn in, and that's very important as we get do this process. Yes, Honourable MacPherson.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. My surname is spelled horribly incorrectly. It's for the benefit of the secretary. It's M-A-C, this is the Irish version. It's quite insulting to me, but being a Scotsman. So the P is lowercase, so it's M-A-C lower P. Thank you.
No, look, I also, certainly take your point. I mean, my father was a Scotsman, so I have a great understanding for your feelings. And therefore, we'll try and get these initials right the next time. Thank you. So it's M-A-C lowercase P because he's not Irish. He's Scots. Right, okay. Page 2. There we are. Apologies, there we are. Those are page 2. I'm also asking the DDG, I know that this is not her role, but just to check some of the names for the DTI there, if they have been correct or perhaps somebody else can assist there. I certainly hope they are. And there we are. Right. And we have someone to propose a well, we've got the third page here, page 3, DTI's mandate, key areas on focus and outstanding issues. The closure, very late meeting, very well attended, and the attached report is PCT1 with the correct codes on. Has everyone got that? Because perhaps not everyone was at that meeting who's now here. Right, can I have someone to propose adoption? Thank you, Honourable Ntali. Thank you, Honourable Luyenge. What about the other parties? They all agree. There are no problems. Right. We seem to have two sets of... Is this because of small business? Right. Okay. That's the one set going through. There's just one thing that I ought to raise here. I did raise it before. It is our practice in this committee that when somebody has been away on medical leave, you know, for the length of time we've had the Honourable Oriani Ambrosini, he is a formal member of this committee, we convey something in writing to the member that we certainly wish him well. I just want to propose that we can do this. Is that agreed? Thank you very much. Next set of minutes, the 8th of July, in Good Hope Chambers. Right, we had the page there, let's see. Yeah, well, Honourable MacPherson, we are aware of that now, and it's going to be corrected all along, all right. And then page two. Mr. McCoofy, who's the CEO of the NAMESA, I think that spelling is right, is it M-U-K-H-U-F-H-I? Well, silence is agreement, yes, okay. Page three. I will come back again to the sensor and the space, etc., as soon as I have got a response from the Honourable Froelich. Page four. Members, I really am going to appeal to you to retain these minutes so that you don't repeat asking, you know, some of the questions that have already been responded to. So keep them. These are good reference minutes, these. Page five. You will notice there that the register had to be corrected, and hopefully it's now quite correct now. There are a lot of asterisks here on the register against, what is it, Honourable Lakota, Honourable Kwankwa. Now, are they alternate because the Freedom Front has been nominated by them to sit here? Okay, fine. Okay, can we have someone to propose adoption? Who was present, Honourable MacPherson, thank you. Seconded by Honourable Liu Yenge, thank you. The last set of minutes, the 10th of July. Names again. Right, page one. Page two. The codes are down there. Has everyone got those documents? Yes, Honourable Montash. Yes. I hope it was correct on the others, was it? Did you notice? You remember? Yeah, very important. That's why I was saying please check these initials, especially in the first couple of months. Thank you. That will be corrected. Right. Okay. Page three. I think what members are saying is that maybe advisable to give us that first page again just to show us that the amendment was implemented, all right? Fine. Thank you. Page three. I do think whoever does that page could have looked at their own register, because it's correct on the register. All right, these things we must just start to be a little bit more meticulous about. Can we please ask someone to propose the adoption of the minutes with the amendment?
Just one slight amendment.
Page?
On the front page, I see it says Tuesday, 10 July, but I'm sure that was a Thursday evening.
So do I. Right. Now, I'm really going to say this formally. I want these minutes checked for spelling, names, and dates. There are two of you now. Between the two of you, your eyesight should be fine. Fine. We have someone to propose the adoption of these minutes. Thank you, Honourable Nkongi, seconded by Honourable Montash. Right. Now we've got the minutes of what outstanding? The 11th. I'll have those tomorrow, thank you. Because there are two of you. One of you can do something else, the other the minutes. Right. Members, is the tea ready? It is. You can formulate your questions during the tea break, and then we can come back at 10 past 11. It's now 5 to 11. Thank you.
Because never Thank you.